Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to review the 24th and final race of the 2024 Formula One season, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albers-Daly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
I'm good, thank you. I had some luck today.
Oh.
On my...
Good luck?
No, good luck. I know. Whenever I have to go to work and then get the train home, I have to get two trains, and usually there's a half hour wait between them both. This time, and annoyingly, I always get in like a minute after there's a train that like would go to my house. Not straight to my house, but you know, where I need to go.
Impressive proximity too.
She reads my mind too well sometimes.
She knew we were coming up with a dumb sentence.
My first train was on time, and the train that usually leaves a minute before I get to the station was delayed, so I didn't have to wait. I could just get on straight onto that train. So I got home like half an hour earlier.
That is fantastic news.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Timo, have you suffered any such luck today?
No good luck, no bad luck. And that's probably all right with me, which means I've just had a nice, quiet, long day. So I'm good. And we made it. 24 Grand Prix. We actually made it. It's been 67 years this year, and we've had way more than 24 Grand Prix, but we got here. How are you?
I'm shattered. You can hear it in my voice. I'm exhausted by it. But
You've been shattered for a while.
Yeah. It's been one of those years where sort of a decade happens within a year as opposed to a year happens in a decade. And it's been an exciting and certainly interesting year of Formula One. No doubt we'll do a full season review in the coming weeks, but we'll crack on with the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix review and a quick bit of the news that sort of spun out from the weekend. First of which is Alex Jakes is departing Formula Two. Abu Dhabi was his final time commentating on the feeder series. We assume he's sticking on commentating on Formula One. We don't know what his whereabouts are going to be going forwards.
That was my question.
What's he doing next?
Yeah, we're not sure why this has happened and what his plans are next. I really hope that if he is sticking around, because he's already doing kind of Channel 4 and F1 TV intermittently as it is. I just put him on Sky. If we're still going to have to do the Sky stuff, then put him in there. Him and Brundle Senior or him and whoever, it would just make it better. I mean, it's already great with the commentary with him on Channel 4 with Coulthard and Weber occasionally, and whoever else is there, he always just elevates it. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. But whoever replaces him for F2 has got awfully big shoes to fill, and I would not be envious of whoever. You often think, oh, that'd be quite a fun job. I would not want to follow him up, though. That is right. Unbelievably bad luck.
He's a brilliant energetic commentator and very knowledgeable about the drivers he speaks about and their sort of emotionally linked to it.
Watching Murray Walker and then just decided to consume every piece of knowledge about Formula One history that's ever come out in like whole textbook forms and just regurgitate it well. And he then did that for the Fina series.
Do you think they'll nab Harry Benjamin off of Sky Sports?
I don't know, because Harry stood in at Sky. He's happy at BBC. I don't know. It'll be... I don't know what the shenanigans are going to be when it comes to moving
this
people around.
There was no one obvious to come up through those sorts of ranks either. We were talking about this off podcast the other week, and we were like, who would you get in if you did move people up and away and all this sort of thing? And no, not yourself. Don't be silly. A professional. But he had a very good send-off, and we messaged a bit just after he did do his final goodbye, and as poignant as that was at points, I did like the fact, because anyway, you'd have missed it, he did say that about Alex Brundle, was like, I'm the one person who thinks that actually your dad sounds like you.
Yeah, it was a touching send-off, and again, I think the fact that he sort of mentioned from his start all the way through to sort of the present day and covering sort of the difficult times that he's had commentating on Formula 2, Juan Manuel Correa's crash, the loss of Antoine Hubert. Like, he's a man that's commentated on some hugely impactful motor racing incidents. I don't think it could be overlooked. So I hope
And the start of rise of a lot of careers. You look at Leclerc and Russell and Norris as the prime examples of that. Like, he was there before most people, generally speaking, will have had eyes on them in the broad spectrum of it, and he's commentated on all of their career essentially.
I mean, Piastri too, you look at Doohan as well, who's now stepping up to it, Gabriel Bortoleto as well, Franco Colapinto, like somewhere in the region of like a half of the current grid will have had that man commentate on them for the past sort of 5 years.
Probably, if I did the math on it, probably a surprising number of people on the IndyCar grid.
Yeah, that too as well. But anyway, we'll move on from Alex Jakes to Graham Loudon, who returns to Formula One. The former Marussia sporting director has joined General Motors as their team principal. And he's been an advisor to Andretti for the past few years, looking at their different sort of motorsport arcs. So it's a sort of sensible move for General Motors to go, you there, attached to the team that's not exactly us, but more certainly going to eventually be us, come hither. We'd like you to do some things for us, which makes a great deal of sense. He knows the sport. He's obviously had that role within the sport before, so he knows how it's supposed to operate as well. So it's a sensible decision.
It's an interesting choice. I mean, he left Marussia at the end of 2015, but he's sort of remained within the paddock, acting as a motorsport consultant for Zhou Guan Yu, and he's been sort of advising and working on the project of getting an 11th team into Formula One for the last 2 years. So he's embedded and established within the team, but whether that, I don't know, correlates with him being a good team principal, I guess we'll have to find out.
It was a bit of a blast from the past that I wasn't necessarily expecting. Like you said, I mean, he's been around, but he's not been in the spotlight too much. And then the name kind of rang a bell. I was like, I know this, but why do I know this? And you see the picture and go, oh, okay, this dude again. Interesting. You've not left, but you've not been here either, sort of thing. And you go, oh, okay, interesting. I'm kind of intrigued to see where we're going now. And after we've had Flavio come back, we've now had this gentleman come back. Who's next? These things always come in threes. Oh. I was gonna hope to say Eddie Jordan, but
no, Eddie Jordan's having too much fun doing podcasts and occasionally appearing in the back of my sister's selfies in a cafe. Other news when it relates to General Motors and Cadillac with their Formula One entry is that Ferrari will be supplying them engines on their arrival in the sport. General Motors won't have a Formula One engine ready to go until around 2028, they reckon. So we get at least 2 years of Ferrari Driver Academy drivers appearing in Cadillac cars for either FP1 sessions or simply as space fill exercises, because you still don't know who's actually going to be driving this car when it appears in just over a year's time. Obviously, names have already been bandied about on the internet. Daniel Ricciardo is obviously one of them, but Colton Herta is another that is more likely to make that move, and certainly one that I'd be excited to see appear in Formula One.
Seeing as he works with Zhou Guan Yu, I feel like Zhou Guan Yu might kind of be in there, even if it's just like a development driver, something in that kind of role.
Especially if Zhou is going to be tied to Ferrari as one of their development and test drivers, it makes sense that obviously, again, he's now going to be familiar with the engines, with the drivetrain, with the control systems. If you're going to then have a team that runs those engines and you've got that driver's former sort of coordinator now as their sporting director and sort of principal, you sort of go, links are forming here. So yeah, Zhou Guan Yu, he's not going to be there next year, but I wouldn't rule him out for 2026. Speaking of Zhou Guan Yu, actually, this all seems to tie together quite nicely. I don't know if someone's reordered all these news stories. If they have, they've done well. Thank you, Timo. The Chinese Grand Prix is being retained until 2030. It's pretty sort of Harold Dye on this one, does what it says on the tin.
Yeah, it's a little surprising that it's received such a long extension after what has been quite a lackluster Grand Prix this year and previously when it was last, what was it, F1000, because that was built as ditch water. I still like the circuit, and maybe it's just the cars in question that haven't been suited best to it. Maybe the 26 cars will suit it better, but none of the last kind of two Grand Prix, at least, that we've seen that have done much for me. I think before that, it was 2018, that was Ricciardo winning, I think, which, okay, was very good because obviously Ricciardo winning, but the fact that you have to go back that far already just kind of thinks, I don't mind an extension, but I'm just surprised it's that long an extension.
Wasn't it that they came back this year to sort of test whether the teams and sort of F1 liked going there still? And obviously it's been agreed.
Well, I said I like the circuit. I just think in terms of what it provided us with in terms of entertainment, didn't do much.
I really like driving around it. It's a nice track to drive around.
I think the crucial thing to remember is that obviously, A, it's a Herman Tilke design, so it's sort of hit and miss when it comes to the work from his pencil. But at the same time, this was a circuit that was designed with the 2004 Formula One cars in mind, which were smaller, nimbler, differently agile cars. They behaved incredibly differently. So, of course, the racing that we see now with these bigger, heavier, differently able cars is going to vary hugely from when we saw Rubens Barrichello winning the first Chinese Grand Prix in 2004, sort of thing. We're looking at a very different car on that circuit, and that's possibly what's going to be driving this difference or lack of excitement in the racing.
Can they, I mean, I'll have to look back and see what's around the circuit. How much can they change the layout? Well, the only thing I can remember at the minute is obviously the straight with the grandstands, big grandstand one side, and then in the backdrop, because that's really changed over the landscape over the years. It was basically sort of empty, and now you've got all these skyscrapers in the back, but that's quite far away, but I can't remember.
The only change that they've been able to make, the layout, the only time I've seen that change the layout was when Formula E went there earlier this year. They cut the track in half, essentially, and around turn six or seven, they just then shimmied back into the start-finish straight from there and missed out the whole last third of the track. But I thought, again, I like the track. It's, like you say, it's nice to go around, and it works on a lot of levels. I just don't think that these cars are best suited to it. And like, we've seen that with a lot of tracks, to be fair, where cars are just too wide or too big generally for it to provide decent racing. And if we can't get a good race there next year, considering how competitive it should be, then it'll be interesting to compare that to 26 when we've got these brand new cars to see then. Because if it then doesn't do it in those 2 years back to back, where you've got one being a really competitive season, the two when you've got new brand new cars that are smaller, then maybe you're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah. The Formula E circuit cuts. It basically does the start, finish straight, the big snaily section through 1, 2, 3, and 4, then the big run out to 5 and 6. Then it goes 7, 8, and then at 9, instead of being a long, tight left, it just sort of jinks a little bit and then sort of beelines its way straight back to the main start, finish straight. It cuts out all of the long, sort of big back straight with the heavy braking zone at 14, which wasn't as exciting as we were anticipating for the Formula One, because
I'm
the wind.
The Formula E cars have just run out of power as they get to bottom.
Yeah, the long, big straight. And again, they'd sort of cap out when it comes to their top speed. While they're great off the line, high-end top speed, they're getting better, the Formula E cars. But again, they'd be coming up about 15 miles an hour short, of certainly for the long, powerful circuit here. Plus, wasn't China weirdly constantly trying to catch itself on fire this year as well? Like, bits of the glass were just sort of spontaneously combusting. So, strange, but we'll see how it goes. Meanwhile, Max Verstappen will serve his swearing penalty in Rwanda, which seems like a very odd choice. Sort of most of the Western world seems to be treating Rwanda as a strange penal colony at the moment. It's where the FIA prize giving is happening. So he's heading out there, working with the Rwanda Automobile Club on one of its grassroots projects, supporting women going into the sort of early stage, I think it's like rallycross or something they've got going on there. So that's what his community service aspect of his swearing fine from Singapore is going to be.
I feel like he won't mind that.
It's not the worst. It's not going litter picking. Meanwhile, with Max Verstappen serving his penalty in Rwanda, Hi-Tech is joining Formula One Academy for the new season. The outfit currently fields teams in Formula 2 and Formula 3. It also recently had a bid to join Formula 1, and it will expand the grid to 18 cars consistently in 2025. Liam Block will be carrying on for 2025 season with Williams and ART as well when it comes to F1 Academy news. There's been other announcements we've missed off.
Not off the top of my head for drivers, no. We've got the drivers that we've got confirmed there for next year hasn't changed, I think, since last time. We'll go over all of those in our feeder series recap for Formula 2 just to be on the safe side. But great to see Hi-Tech join the fray, essentially, and great to see Liam Block stay with Williams. It makes both of them make a lot of sense, really. And I was kind of surprised initially when Hi-Tech didn't come in at the start of F1 Academy, because I thought, oh, we're getting essentially F2 and F3 teams just going into another category. Why is it not all of them? But I like the fact that it's another three spots on the grid, and we get, considering, like, again, as I mentioned pretty much every time we talk about F1 Academy, how much of the grid is going to be brand new next year. You've now got three new people you can bring in, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing who they are, because, as I keep saying as well, I want to not know who they are when I hear who they are.
And hopefully they'll have better cars next year too.
I wouldn't hold your
Amen.
breath on that. Meanwhile, Taylor Barnard isn't missing Formula 2, it seems. He became the youngest podium finisher in Formula E history in São Paulo at his most recent race weekend. So, yeah, he's having a grand old time now. He's ditched, where was he? PHMAIX, wasn't he? I think.
Somewhere around there, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I forget what they were actually called at the time.
Yeah, they sort of went through a bunch of names through the season. But anyway, he dropped out relatively mid-season-ish to go and spend more time doing Formula E after a successful stand-in with, I want to say, McLaren sometime in the middle of the season. And yeah, he's having a grand old time racing electric cars. So kudos to him.
Yeah, I mean,
Meanwhile,
did a good enough job to replace Jake Hughes at that team, who was already an established driver when he came in for a guest spot at the tail end of last season. I'm pretty sure when Sam Bird broke his foot or hand or something, I think. He's always breaking something, bless him. But did a good enough job to go, you know what, let's get rid of this Jake fella and we'll put in a new kid. And immediately does exactly what they'd hoped him to do.
It was just a, it was
Just a flesh wound.
great. No, great that he got a podium, but I think it was frustrating because he had so much more energy than Antonio
Well, yeah, I
Fiat
kind of thought he would
Costa.
make it a
Like he
bit
could have,
further up
yeah,
towards the end with how much more power he had. But
he could have got second, and he was very lucky that he had Sam Bird behind him, his teammate, because they maintained positions.
Yeah,
Which
he
I know we're
did.
talking about F1 generally here, but that was just a great bit of teamwork from Bird on the team radio during the race, going, "Come on, tell him he can go for it. I've got him. I'm behind him. I'll keep it in check. Or if he can go and win this, tell him he can go for it." And I think, like you say, it was just perhaps that semi-rookie lack of experience that meant he wasn't able to deploy that power as well as other people would have been able to in his position.
Either way, he's got his feet under the table nicely at the team, and look forward to some more strong results from him, because he always seemed like a relatively nice fellow in Formula 2. Meanwhile, there's some good news for Kevin Magnussen, who is setting off to race in the World Endurance Championship in 2025. He'll be racing for BMW Motorsport in the Hyperclass category, and his first race will be the renowned 24 Hours of Daytona.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Kev's done some endurance stuff. He's done some IMSA stuff before as well. So he's used to this level of sports car racing, and the slightly more relaxed schedule, I think, will fit him better with family life. So he can kick back a little bit and relax, which is good. He's had a decent run of things in Formula One. I think he's the highest point scoring driver for Haas in its history as well. So he's got some good accolades to him there.
He's been there for most of it, so I'd be
Yeah, he's
surprised if he
going
wasn't.
to. Yeah, that is sort of a numerical advantage to it to a certain extent. But at the same time, he's suffered through the highs and lows of that team as well.
What team was he meant to be joining when he was doing endurance racing before he got put into back into F1?
Was still with Chip Ganassi at that point, wasn't he?
Yeah, because I think he did a race as well. Let me see. I don't know why worry Kevin Ganassi. I've Googled the two halves of the wrong thing there.
You have a little moustache there, and he may have been that tail flicking around. It's a possum.
Kevin, what did he do in 2022? He came
Yeah.
back to Haas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was IMSA Sports Championship Cadillac. He did the Daytona 24 Hours of Daytona there in January. It came sixth, so not too terrible. If that's what you're after. So yeah. And he was with AF Corsa for the Golf 12 Hours as well that year. Yeah, he's also tried IndyCar as well with McLaren in 2021. We're in America, so he's got options lining up, I should think, depending on what he wants to supplement his world endurance career with. Regardless, we'll move on to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, and we'll delve into our review. We'll kick off with Nico Hülkenberg being hit with a three-place grid penalty for overtaking two cars in pit exit, demoting him from a very, very strong P4 to P7. Charles, already suffering a 10-place grid drop before even starting qualifying after taking a new battery in FP1, was also sort of languishing toward the rear of the field, with both Williams, who took new gearboxes and five-place penalties to go with them. And then for one last time this year, it was, of course, eyes to the lights and foot to the floor. And Norris gets a good start from pole for once, as does Verstappen, who noses up the inside of Piastri, only for the two to collide and spin out. The messy first lap sees Leclerc nip through the field and up to eighth from P19. It gets messier still as Perez is clipped by Bottas, the Mexican going round and retiring from the race. Piastri contacts the back of Colapinto as they go into turn six, the Australian earning a 10-second penalty for his crimes, the same 10 seconds that Verstappen earned for clipping Oscar 5 laps prior. Important to note, Verstappen now has 8 penalty points on his license, and many of them will be there in the opening two-thirds of next year. With that,
well,
we might as well...
one driver, let alone when they need another one to replace Verstappen again.
Yeah. With that out of the way, then, we might as well dive into Red Bull. And, of course, Max finishing P6, Checo DNFing.
Yeah, going off what you were saying there, really, mate, Horner was talking to Arianna Brava after the Grand Prix in the manner, according to her, that Perez's time is definitely up, and now it's just a matter of when they're going to announce it. And thus begins the headache, as you alluded to, of who do we keep getting in to replace these people? And there was a reel from NASCAR doing the rounds. I can't remember where it's from, but it was NASCAR. It must have been an endurance style race as well, or something along those lines, where driver comes into the pit stop to change over, and the next driver in just literally yanks him from the car and pulls him out straight away, and then jumps in himself on, thinking Red Bull better not see this clip. They'll get ideas about how quickly they can implement that themselves from a weekend basis. On Verstappen's side, ambitious, I think, is the polite word I'm going to use for what he got up to turn one. Maybe he was hoping it was Norris and not Piastri. But P6 in the end sounds about right for him, and everything else kind of was fair. And it was nice to see, whilst some of the penalties this weekend seemed harsh in places, at least it was consistent, which we're moving slowly in the right direction then.
The dive on the inside was unnecessary for Max, I'd say. It didn't need to be that, especially when it takes out a member of a team that's fighting for a world championship. In terms of Perez, I mean, the contact between him and Bottas wasn't really Perez's fault. It was just unfortunate. And whilst I don't think this race would have changed the outcome of his inevitable exit out of F1, it would have been nice for him to end on a more of a high and at least see the race through. I think retiring on what can be your final race on the first lap in F1 is just, that's such a cruel fate.
Did provide with some excellent post-race comments from Steve Jones on Channel 4, though, because he went to David Coulthard and went, "You've got experience with spinning out on the first lap of your final Grand Prix. How is that?" thanks for that.
Painful, but ultimately true. Yeah, Max's opening incident was a little out of the ordinary for him, but Perez having contact and retiring didn't really need a crystal ball to get that one. A sensible guess would have seen that one coming. I think the car is struggling, and they are reaching an apex of what it can achieve. Their development next season really depends on what an Adrian Newey-less team can now produce, and that'll be really interesting to watch for next year. I'm excited to see what a backfoot Red Bull can do, though, especially with someone new next to Max. I think that's going to be exciting, and I hope it's Yuki Tsunoda.
At least one new person next to Max.
At least one new person next to Max for one part of the season. I think it's going to be Yuki Tsunoda. Everyone seems to be suggesting it's
you
Liam
want
Lawson.
It to be Yuki Tsunoda. Different.
Yeah, I have some logic as to why it might not be, though, which is quite reasonable. I think we'll get to that when we talk about AlphaTauri in a minute. Gasly has somehow ended up third throughout all of this, the upgrades on his Alpine showing the difference again over the unupgraded one of his new teammate Jack Doohan. By this point, it was 54 laps of breath holding to see if Norris could hold on to the win and cinch the title for McLaren. Ferrari's opening pace saw them close into the lead, though, of McLaren, so we might as well touch on Ferrari quickly while passing through. Carlos P2, Charles P3.
It was a fantastic recovery from Charles. I mean, by the end of lap one, he was already 11 positions up, going from 19th to 8th. Carlos, I mean, he was lucky to avoid the contact between Verstappen and Piastri ahead on lap one. And they both did their best that they could to maximize a result if, you know, something had gone awry with Norris. And that includes the team too, as they maximized everything they could really on strategy as well. But Norris nor McLaren caved under pressure or put foot wrong either.
I think if McLaren were favourites for next year, as many people are touting, then I think surely Ferrari are the favourites to beat them. because they just seem to have everything nailed down a bit more now. And as we've said before, McLaren, yeah, they won the Constructors' Championship this year, but they've, I don't want to say they've been lucky in places, but they've been lucky in places in terms of when they've made mistakes, it's not cost them too much in the grand scheme of things, or it's more impacted the Drivers' Championship than it's on the Constructors. Whereas Ferrari, they know how to make mistakes, and they've been burned by that quite a bit in the last however many years you want to insert here. So I think they are more a complete package now. So if you're going to have a thread, if Red Bull is going to be flailing about trying to figure out what to do with itself, and Mercedes isn't going to be back up there next year, because I think they'll use it as a kind of another version of this year in the sense of capitalize on two teams when you get there, but also train up Antonelli so that we can get ready for 26, then Ferrari have got to be there. And like you said, anyway, it's absolutely a Herculean drive by Leclerc to reassert his credentials to be a championship contender. And I think, again, pretty neat send-off for Sainz's first chapter with Ferrari. Like you said, he couldn't really do much more. He needed something to go wrong ahead of him, and he just couldn't close that gap, unfortunately, especially when he went on to the second phase of the Grand Prix with the new tyres. He just pushed a bit too hard too soon, I think, and then just wasn't able to bridge that gap of, what was it, 7 seconds. At that point, you really do need a safety car in Abu Dhabi for once, but he didn't get that, unfortunately.
Yeah, the McLaren stability really was sort of the downfall of Ferrari, I think, through this season. And yeah, McLaren, while they haven't suffered outright bad luck or good luck, they've, through no sort of effort of their own, it seems, capitalised on the bad luck of those around them. Let's say sometimes there's been issues or problems for that Ferrari, and McLaren have made the most of that at weekends where they could. But overall, it was a great performance this weekend, and Charles' recovery drive does show that they understand how to get that car set up for a race as well. Its race pace, its ability to turn on and maintain its tyres under the right sort of driving conditions was phenomenal. It was pretty much untouchable coming through the field, and Sainz's consistency was peerless bar that blip where he was bedding in the new tyres. If they can bring a solid set of options to testing, they stand a great chance to start 2025 on a good footing. And as we saw this year, a good start can be key to dominating a season, or at least coming through a season strongly if you're a driver or constructor. If they can get an early hold on that title, they can make things difficult for McLaren to try and fight back through in the latter half.
Was it 2022? They had a really strong start of the season.
Yeah, and they had the double podium at Bahrain, the opening race. And you sort of go, oh, a Ferrari back. And then Red Bull sort of went, oh, we should have let those points slide in the first two rounds. And by sort of Spain, it was all over.
And then they had, what, a strong sort of end of season, mid to end season this year. So they kind of just need to amalgamate the two, those two.
And last year as well, actually, because you look at Vegas last year, they did pretty well there, kind of considering the Red Bull dominance, and just like they were the only ones to get those little chinks in the armor with Sainz in Singapore and then Leclerc in Vegas. And you think, oh, I hope it's a little bit like seeing Verstappen in 2020. You think, oh, maybe we've got something potentially for next year, but you don't realise quite how much of something you've got on your hands there. And then the next year comes and you go, well, crikey.
Yeah, let's do something with this. Speaking of teams that have potentially got something interesting on their hands, we'll quickly have a look at Alpine as well. Pierre P7 and Doohan P15. I don't think Pierre's P7 is wholly respective of his race in the whole, but there's something interesting for that car that seems to have come alive in the past few rounds. A great result for him overall. And there's a development route that's on its way. The points haul this weekend as well, jumping him up two places to P10. Doing steady introduction to the series. I think ultimately the unupgraded car was a slow heap, but a reliable one. And Gasly survives the season with no major damage. So one of the cheapest drivers on the grid too. He did suffer damage in Japan.
Could it be the cheapest one?
Yeah, with this almost certainly the cheapest one. Everyone's sort of going, oh, he's had $0 of damage. I'm like, yeah, but he obliterated his floor in Japan, contacting Ocon off the start. So, like,
it's
not zero damage.
So Ocon's done that too.
But, yeah, there's been a relatively tidy and relatively clean season from Gasly, and I think it's that season that has cemented why he stayed with Alpine at the end of this year, and Ocon was the one that was sort of pushed aside to Haas, as it were. So
there's potentially potential here for next year, and that's about as ambitious as I want to get for that team. And interestingly enough, it's come out that Flavio has told the higher ups that he can get them to winning ways within 3 years, Which is quite amusing because if you add that up, that roughly equates to, oh, I don't know, 100
100
race plan.
races.
So it's like, oh, we're back here again, are we? For God's sake. Let's see. Attempt number, what are we on at this point? But yeah, Gasly taking P10 in the championship is quite deserved, I think. It's a shame for Hülkenberg because I'm pretty sure he was holding P10 for good while. But so like, you bastard. Last race, and then Pierre Gasly out of nowhere comes and takes it from you. And what a turnaround from the start of the season. I mean, you think back to, well, just how shambolic that first race went for them in a lot of ways and how it has continued since then. And very, very strong in the season, especially for Gasly in particular. From Brazil onwards, he's even the qualifying in Vegas. It's a shame that his car decided to go pop when it did because he could have had another very, very strong result there. And yeah, a bit of a baptism of fire for doing, but he finished the Grand Prix, which is the main thing there. So I can't really complain. And I don't think anyone's really expecting, as ambitious as my predictions were on that front, him to do anything much there. But it's good that he just gets as much kind of seat time as possible because, again, it's a sport where even with post-season testing, you can't generally just go out and go, I'm just going to go and nip in your horn car for a bit and just have a drive around. It's not that easy.
Yeah, I mean, Hülkenberg have been in P10 since Singapore and looking pretty comfortable there. Meanwhile, when you look at the trace of what Alpine had been doing, as late as what would have been Japan on my list, they were in P10. They somehow made their way up as high as P7 by the Spanish Grand Prix, but slumped to P9 all the way from Azerbaijan through to Mexico. And then, of course, that belt of points in Brazil launched them up to P6, which they stumbled with through Las Vegas, but fought back in Qatar and held on to in Abu Dhabi. So they've had an interesting season when you look at the way their fight's gone and where they've sort of battled from and to.
I think as well it shows, especially now with sort of the upgrades on the car, it shows just how much of a talented driver Gasly really is. You keep seeing it, especially I would say 2021 was a really, really strong season for him. And then sort of the cars after that, or 2020, but not around that
When he
2020.
left Red Bull anyway.
And then the cars sort of fell away from him a bit, and you didn't, as sort of the cars weren't that great, you didn't kind of see what he could do either. And now sort of the cars are good again. You can kind of see as well how talented he really is because he gets kind of more airtime with it as well.
It's that mixed bag of he can't do what Alonso or Button could do when they've got an absolutely terrible car. But if you give him a car that's not totally terrible, he can work with that a lot better then. And as you say, that drivability and caliber of driver is just shine a bit more there. And I can't remember if we talked about it on a podcast or not, or if it was a conversation not with you two and it was someone else. But you've seen it a bit with those drivers that Red Bull churned out and spat out pretty quickly. You've seen that with Albon. You see that now with Gasly. Kind of more time passes that there is a more there's less pressure in a lot of ways there than you've had before with drivers. I think we were talking about this, Jesse, with regards to Russell and Leclerc, having that time at Sauber and Williams respectively before being put into the top team so they could get their feet in the paper. Whereas someone like Norris just had to be there from the start because he's McLaren. So even if they're in the snob, it's still McLaren. Whereas Gasly and Albon are in that kind of category as well of we're just going to launch you into a top team. Good luck to you, and if you're not good enough, you're out again. And then they've had to go through this phase that Russell and Leclerc had, where like we need to figure ourselves out a little bit and have that less pressure. And you can see how that's really benefited Gasly here. And again, it's already looking like a fun season for next year. But if you then throw someone like him into the equation, you stick someone like Alonso in the equation. Who, by the way, said that if he was in the McLaren, he'd have won it earlier than Verstappen would have won it, which I just love as a comment. But you'd have like the, and you throw Gasly in there. That's just a fun outlier because there's a driver in the team that's not going to win a championship next year. But if they get the win of a podium or a win, you can bet your bottom dollar they're going to go all out like they did in Brazil because they literally have nothing to lose.
The importance of drivers like Gasly in this is great because it emphasizes what we've seen with Perez this season, is the second you come off the boil, there is someone that is willing to take your place in that sort of top field of six
Several somethings.
drivers. Yeah. As soon as you start to slip, this is a very competitive field, and someone will be, you'll be quickly eaten up by the chasing pack. And I think that's one of the really fun things we've seen this season, is just how quickly you sort of make a momentary slip and you are done for. Not just in a race, but the whole season long. All of a sudden, as soon as we saw Perez sort of scrapping around that P12, 11, 10, 9, 8, it's allowing those Aston Martins, those Alpines, those RBs to sneak in there and nip away at those points. And that's where we see that huge points deficit that Perez has to Red Bull, to Verstappen. That's where we see the sort of stumbling back from Perez down to P8, a spot that he ended up in as early as Azerbaijan and never got close to getting out of.
Slightly changing the subject. Did, from memory, bar 2022, hasn't Gasly always got a podium every year since 2019?
That's a very, very good question. Let's have a quick look.
I can think of podiums from obviously 2019 to now, bar 2021 in 2022.
2019, Brazil P2. 2020, Italy, a win. 21, Azerbaijan, P3. 22, the RB was a bit of a pig, and he was scrapping around for points there, no podium. 23, Dutch Grand Prix. And then 24, Sao Paulo. So yeah, with the exception of 2022, since he left Red Bull, he has always stepped on the podium once a year. And again, he's a driver that, like Timo said, if you give him an absolute pig of a car, he's not going to get a great deal out of it. But if that car's got a whiff of promise, he's able to capitalize on it and drive around it. And one of the interesting things that's come out of testing so far is Yuki Tsunoda driving the current Red Bull and going, hell, this car suits my driving style to a T. Like, I haven't really had to adapt to it. It's set up exactly how I want it. And he was like, I felt immediately at home and was quick. And while we won't see times from those testing sessions, I don't think, I would love to know what Yuki Tsunoda was pumping out of that Red Bull, because it would have been impressive.
I think there was a timesheet going around somewhere, because Sainz was at the top of it.
Let's have a look and see.
It's what Red Bull needs, though. I don't know why they won't...
Don't make me accuse you of being too logical again, Ali, mate. I won't have it. I'm going to do this far too much with people lately.
It's literally like the phrase, you can't lead a horse. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You've given...
It's headed to the flood. Like, come on.
We've given you Yuki Tsunoda. Use him.
No.
They've sort of been leaked, it seems, but Leclerc, fastest in the Ferrari, Sainz second, Russell third, Hülkenberg fourth, Antonelli fifth, Iwasa sixth, Ward seventh, Doohan 8th, Aaron 9th, Ocon 10th, Browning 11th, Hirakawa 12th, Lawson 13th, Leclerc appearing again, I'm assuming that's Arthur, 14th, Hajar 15th, Norris 16th, Tsunoda 17th, Bortoletto 18th, Piastri 19th, Crawford 20th, Drugovic 21st, Vesti 22nd, and Fuoco 23rd. So I assume they've had different drivers in that cars through the day as well.
So a driver you forget exists quite frequently.
Yeah, but like looking at the laps they've done as well is quite impressive. Like the distance some of them have really been racking up on that sort of postseason test.
Carlos has done a lot, hasn't he? And he's
did 146.
He's running on rage because he's like, it's the most renewable energy source he's got now to try and drag the team up to winning ways.
Yeah, like he finished the Grand Prix, came back to 200 laps of a filming day with Williams, and then has gone on and done a further 200 miles filming and then 146 laps of testing. So he has immediately got into it and gone, right. The reason I was walking weird in Saudi Arabia is because I had the plans to this year's car shoved up my ass. It wasn't because I'd had my appendix out and had stitches in. So yeah, what he's clearly done is retrieve
If you x-ray him at any point this year, is where it should have been, there's just a little bag that's just resistant for all the internal fluids and everything. It's just plans hidden in there. Like, no one's going to check here, are they?
Just a USB stick. Anyway, before we get too distracted talking about putting USB sticks into innocuous places of Carlos Sainz, We'll move back to the Grand Prix, where the strategy is split up and down the grid from the original one stop to a lot of teams taking two stops for their drivers. Zhou picks up a 5-second penalty for a false start, while Alex Albon was cleared of his. On lap 24, Liam Lawson pits, but the front left hasn't gone on properly, so he has to re-pit for it to get tightened. This later garners the Kiwi a 10-second stop-and-go penalty. None of those about these days. So while we're talking about him, we might as well look to Minardi, especially having recently mentioned Yuki Tsunoda as well. Yuki finishing P12, Liam DNFing ultimately.
Not really much to say here in my part, so I'll just leave it to you two. I just feel like it was just such an anomalous race, really.
It was just messy. A messy way to end the season. I mean, Yuki with his anti-stall issues off the line, the team not bolting Lawson's wheel on fully, and then him retiring a few laps to go. It kind of makes you forget that this team has been in this... Sorry. Just dying, it's fine. You forget that this team has been in the sport under sort of the Red Bull banner since, what, 2005, and Minardi before that.
Yeah, it was the only thing I can think of to make them feel slightly better about it, Yuki in particular, is that his issues could have been worse. You could have been Isaac Hadjar in your Formula 2 race over the weekend, because that went a lot worse for you in terms of messing that one up.
Yeah,
you would have missed that.
Yeah.
4.5 points separating him and his main title rival, Ellie May, and he stalls as the lights go out, and by lap 3 is lapped by said contender in the championship, and nothing then really... It's the one race of the season when nothing then really happens in Formula 2 craziness, and he's not getting back from that.
Yeah, it doesn't get the safety car he needs to close up to the back of the field. It is gut-wrenching for him, but it doesn't matter, because he's going to RB to replace one of the two drivers at the team who will move up to replace Sergio Perez. Overall, though, Minardi's race was, a bit lackluster. It's the feel of a team that's exhausted, and with Lawson's car giving up, the feel of a car that's given up too. I'm wondering if we'll see Liam Lawson move up, because RB wants to keep Yuki, so they have a solid lead driver. This is my theory behind why, unfortunately, we won't see
it's your,
Yuki
it's your,
moving
it's your
up.
Latest theory. I think, like, there is sound logic to it, which is not something I usually say to you, but it just smacks of every time this conversation comes back around. You've gone plumbed the depths once again, like, I've got a new idea why this is happening this time. And it's like, my God, man, let it go. You can't control any of it. It's not up to you.
I don't think it's something that we can make sense of. You can't make it make sense. Because
despite how much you might try with your logic, Ellie May.
Well,
I'm trying to save you from yourself.
Like the Arabic science in the Middle East, I have a lot of theories, okay? But I think this one is the most watertight and sound one, is that RB is going to hold on to Yuki, because essentially Red Bull have said, keep hold of him. He can be essentially the replacement for Pierre Gasly, training up new drivers as they come through. They've seen that Yuki has got the talent and the ability to communicate with the team and to sort of say, do this to the car, we need to make these changes, and explain it in a way that someone else can understand. And what they'll then do is they'll just go, Liam Lawson is fueled entirely by rage. We'll just put him in the Red Bull. Max Verstappen gets on well when there's an Antipodean in the car next to him, so we'll simply just go and find another one of those. But
we've had two angry drivers in Red Bull at the same time, and I think it'd be quite fun to see them both together in a, not a backmark car, but on a car that's on the back foot, where imagine them working together, and it's like you've just seen a nature documentary, and these two unlikely species have teamed up with each other to go after prey, like, ooh, shit, that's not good.
Yes.
But also, that's fun to watch from a safe distance.
We could have seen this in any number of combinations of Lawson and Hadjar at RB, Tsunoda and Hadjar
at
RB.
Red Bull
both
is more...
of them are at Red Bull. We could see. But again, there is the scope for this happening, because at some point, Max Verstappen's going to have to go on paternity leave. I don't know if it's an enforced thing you get as an F1 driver, but he'll go on paternity leave. So someone will have to step up for a few weeks to the top team, and then we might get some interesting drivers up in that Red Bull seat. But
I like
either way,
the idea of him bringing that up in conversation with Helmut Marko, Zimbardo. No, we didn't do that back in my day. Let me tell you how we did parenting back in my day.
Are conversations that would get this podcast cancelled if we aired them. But yeah, I think RB are going to keep hold of Yuki.
I don't think he'll go off of paternity leave, but if Kelly goes into labour during a race weekend, I reckon he'd want to be there. So then they are going to have to find a driver to fill in for him.
So he's going to leave to do
can we take
parental
bets,
things.
Actually,
paternity leave. Okay, yeah. What race weekend is Kelly Piquet going to give birth?
But not necessarily that, but more in terms of it'll happen mid-race. that she actually goes into it. They won't know about it. It'll just be sudden. And someone's going to have to decide whether or not to tell him as he's racing around or to wait.
If it's anything but the Monaco Grand Prix, he's scuppered basically because there's nothing he can do about it. If he's on a flyaway race, he's got nothing unless she flies around the world with him, with the maternity
Yeah, but
ward or
also
whatever
I feel
nearby
like
hospital is
Verstappen's
there.
at the point where he wouldn't give a shit anyway, and he'd just fly out to wherever he needs to fly to because he's Max Verstappen, and what's he got left to prove to anyone?
Also, when you get to a certain point in pregnancy, you're not allowed to fly.
Yeah. So she's
So.
going to have to simply pick the location, Monaco, because that's where they live, and just be there. I don't know.
Right. I want to work out now what race he'll be missing.
Are you assuming that she, like, they immediately announced the world sort of days after it was they conceived, or is
He
she
makes
a week there?
it to the birth. She squeezes his hand so hard it breaks, and he then has to miss two or three
Yeah.
Grand Prix while it heals.
Sort of an enforced paternity leave.
This child was made during the summer break, I know it.
Was made.
Yeah.
So that's end of July, August time.
Okay,
Oh,
so
they did it on your birthday, early man.
August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. April. It's going to be born around April, so it's going to be born early season. We're looking at a kid that's going to be
China.
born around the China Bahrain Grand Prix window.
He could have a Chinese baby.
Would be the risk you take, though. Kelly Piquet flies around to races with him. She's accidentally going to give birth to a baby at a Grand Prix, and it's going to grow up with technically the national identity of whichever race her dad was racing at.
It's a shame Saudi's not a bit later on where it just about fits in there. That could be quite a fun workaround for having the first Saudi Arabian Formula One world champion in the future with Mercedes when Toto Wolff signs him.
2025 F1 season. What have we got going on through April?
April, we have got Bahrain.
Japan,
We've
Bahrain,
got
Saudi
Japan and
Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, you know.
Ooh.
Dang. I mean, if we can go anywhere earlier, we've got essentially the first sort of two month span of it to allow for sort of depending on sort of conception. Australia, China, Japan, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Miami, Emilia, Romagna. They might have timed it well enough for the Monaco Grand Prix, 25th of May, though. It's a bit late.
Isn't
So,
it?
yeah,
It's
when would
asking
you?
a lot.
Yeah, depend. It that's going by sort of
You should
Ellie
have
Mae's.
waited.
It's going by Ellie Mae's sort of conception. When's Max Verstappen's birthday, by any chance?
I don't think it's going off
September
Ellie Mae's
30th.
conception. I think
No.
it's going off her guesswork.
His birthday is 30th of September. So if we go October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June. Would put
No.
it end of June.
I only say a summer break because after the pregnancy announced, after they announced the pregnancy, I then saw that loads of people had theories that she was pregnant in the summer. So
Okay.
it's going to be early season. It's going to, I think, latest be April.
Well, I've got the big predictions sheet up over here somewhere, so let's just jot this
Okay, I'll
down.
tell you what then, I'll give you a big one straight off the bat.
Okay.
She'll have the kid at whatever point. I'll make a guess at that. I'm going to say Japan for that.
I was going to say Japan too.
Okay, I'll change it.
We
We'll go
can
China.
have
That's all right. But he has a torrid season up to that point. Child is born. He sees the little baby and he goes, you know what? Screw this F1 malarkey, and he retires to that right there and then.
So he has a terrible race in Australia, and that's it. He quits.
Chinese Grand
Damn,
Prix,
it's China the second race. Yes,
second race on the list, 23rd of
bollocks.
March.
Saudi Arabia.
Ooh, okay, he's going for the
He
Saudi
can have
Arabia
a couple
plot.
more races. Plus, then this is fun for later on when we get a Saudi Arabian champion called Verstappen.
So, but I don't. I'm not going to obviously pose this question at Timo. So, Ellie Mae, when would you take a pregnancy test to sort of get to that sort of
You
definitive
devised
answer?
that one?
I hope you've done more than me, if
Yeah,
anything.
like I feel you're going to know the answer to the question more than Timo. I'm not
Okay,
saying you have, but
it
you're.
would be. Getting results either way, if I'm being honest.
If you do, you should probably get a prostate test.
It
Just get a
depends
lot of tests.
whether they were planning it or not, but I would say it'd be after her, she's missed her first period. So it'd be about 4 weeks.
So that's the thing, we're operating with a sort of 4 week window. I think Vegas is too late for them to have conceived out of celebration.
I did think initially, but then I was like, you're announcing it too soon for that to be.
Yeah. Also, Max was way too drunk over that weekend for any of that sort of shenanigans to have
You can
happened.
still get the job done.
I'm not going to make any personal comments there.
Well, so I've
Clear yourself. Good
You're
one.
not right. She's not. They're not. They weren't going to announce it until they were certain. Like, you don't announce that you're pregnant until,
No.
like, it's safe, and the safety window is 12 weeks. So 12 weeks from.
This weekend, so 8th of December, work back 12 weeks from the 8th of December. I've got a calendar open over here somewhere. Let's see.
It's more September, August time then.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's a bit later in the season.
Bit later, August,
1,
bit late
2, 3,
August,
4,
September.
5, 6, 7, 8. 8 weeks takes us to the 13th of October. 9, 10, 11, 12 weeks takes us to the 15th of September.
I'd say maybe it was in that gap between Baku and Austin.
So it could be Monaco then, no?
If we went for, they did it in the gap. So
I mean,
somewhere around the start of October or end of September, which is funny enough where Max Verstappen's birthday is. So if we did all of October, all of November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June, that kid's being born sort of tail end of
we
June,
may
possibly.
have to change our predictions anyway from Saudi Arabia and Japan because that's quite an early birth as well.
Yeah.
I'd already predicted Monaco, so I'm banking that one now. I'm gonna go.
But
When's
then it
Canada?
also makes sense because then they'd be having it whilst he's within the European leg of.
This is what I said when we started this discussion. This is not a man that doesn't plan these things, Max Verstappen. So, okay, we're looking somewhere around that May June window. So, 5th of May, Miami, 19th of May, Emilia Romagna, 26th of May, Monaco, 9th of June, Canadian Grand Prix, and Spanish Grand Prix, 23rd of June. Which way are you guys going to go?
All right, I'll
I'll go for
change it to
Canada.
Miami.
So, Ellie Mae's going 5th of May, Miami, and Timo, you said Canada.
Are we going to predict whether it's a girl or a boy? I
I
think it's
don't
a
presume to
girl.
know such things.
I
I
think. up to them to decide. It's not allowed to enforce that, isn't it? Timo, Canada. That's a really
It's
well-aged
a
Monty Python
girl.
joke. Okay, so we've made those predictions. We'll come back to those in about 9 months' time, give or take. Anyway, back to where we were.
Yeah, have fun with it,
No, it's all staying in. Colapinto Pinto retires from the race with a suspected power unit issue, so he might as well jump into Williams, having got completely distracted by RB and Max Verstappen's baby. Timo,
you.
will
Not the end that we wanted for Colapinto, though, a bit like Bottas last weekend, unfortunate. Yeah, and a bit like Bottas just generally with Albon as well, just missed out on a point scoring result due to a McLaren. That's just disastrously for them. But I think, as tricky, we were saying after Qatar, it's such a tricky time to be a Williams fan. Not a Williams fan, but kind of, we're just going through a tough period, obviously, with them. But I don't know, something about the weekend and just Vowles' belief in the fact that Sainz, I know he's not going to magically turn it around there or anything, but just already the dedication we've seen, the amount of laps he's putting in, the certainty that of all the options available to him, Williams was the right place to go, just makes me think that they've not come out with this 100-race plan. They're not a junior team to someone else. They're not stake. And it just makes me think that I'm getting on Ellie Mae's hype train a bit more, I think. And I've got no actual logical reason to, but I've got the X-Files in me. I just believe.
I've radiated the positive energy to you.
It's finally got to me.
Well, it was just a gutting way to end the season, really, wasn't it? I mean, the only
Especially for
positive,
Colapinto.
yeah, especially for Colapinto, the only real positive I can take is that no one crashed, no one caused any damage, really. There was an almost crash
Is.
But that
Because
doesn't count, so it's
actually,
all good.
it was an almost.
Yeah. Oh, Williams. A car coming into the final race made of hopes and dreams, plus a new gearbox. Reportedly, teams up and down the field were like lending them like bolts, nuts, fastenings, and bits and pieces just so they could get the two cars together. If you saw any photographs of their floors, they were mostly made out of speed tape as well. Like they were hoping a prayer by the end of this season. Just a rough way for it to all end, especially when they had so much of a mid-season spark. Both drivers sort of came alive in that mid part of the season. And yeah, fingers crossed they've got some ideas for next season.
I treat Williams this year a little bit like one of the ending scenes in Dunkirk, where they're coming back and the old chap giving out blankets and food or whatever is talking to them and going, it's like saying thank you and everything. Like, we didn't do anything, we just survived. That's enough. Like, Williams, you just got through it. We're happy with that. Just keep going now. It's all good, buddy. You got here.
Like got to the final sort of quarter of the championship, and their sort of goal for the year just changed to survive.
That's how I feel like I've been this year.
Mean, if
Which
you
you
don't,
also accomplished, so well done.
I was
yeah,
accomplished, yeah.
congratulations. Yeah, if you don't survive, it's sort of a bit morbid. We'd have to find someone to replace you,
And
which,
makes us question how we're doing this right now on the podcast.
yeah. Irreplaceable. Anyway, lap 31, Bottas locks up on the way into T6, clipping a hard-charging Magnussen, now on some fresh tyres. Bottas suffers a broken steering rod and puncture, and Bottas' contact is then, while forcing him into retirement, literally also earns him a five-place grid penalty. Magnussen pits for softs and begins banking fastest laps after this with a damaged Haas. So business as usual for Kevin Magnussen. Bottas rounding out his career, picking up a five-place grid penalty he has to serve whenever he should return to the sport, so might as well
You
have a
said you
look.
say business as usual, Magnussen, but this one wasn't his fault. Bottas did drive into the side of it.
No, but him sort of being caught in a melee of action, having a bit of a shunt, and still coming out the far side of it and going, screw this fastest lap time. It's sort of very much
Oh
the
yeah, I
Kevin
mean, after
Magnussen.
that, Magnussen was just excellent through that, which we'll get to. But I think that post F1 for both of them, they should team up and go Demolition Derbying together. They would put on a hell of a show.
I think that should be the next public stunt video Bottas does for his What's Next sort of channel.
I was about to say to anybody, but obviously you've been there since told us the in F1 exhibition they have all the drivers there sitting and they're just kind of not holding anything at all. They're just floating materials. I was trying to imagine they'd be left with at the end of it. It's just we had cars,
That's
but
Williams by the
I
end of the
don't
season.
know. Yes, very much that too. But it's just kind of that sort of picture. It's like I don't know how we've managed this, but we're just floating in midair now.
Sort of Looney Tunes style.
Yeah.
Having mentioned that, we might as well talk about both Stake and Haas. We kick off with Stake, finishing with Zhou, P13, and Bottas and DNF.
It's just big sigh, and that's it.
Bitter.
Yeah, it's a rotten way to end. Not pointless as a team, but it's got to be rough for Bottas to go out like that. A strong
He did
career.
finish ahead of Logan Sargeant, though,
Did finish ahead of Logan Sargeant within the top 20, I
with the
think.
last trace.
Yeah, took it to the wire. It's a strong career that's been snuffed out by a pants decision. So here's to hoping we'll find something to move on with. A good position from Joe sees him over jump Liam Lawson as well in the standings on count back, which is something, I suppose.
I find that quite surprising.
Yeah, Joe had some surprisingly decent results pegged in there. Lawson had been so hit and miss that the net result was they tied on points, but on count back, Joe was now able to outplace Lawson. So maybe we know who's going up to the Red Bull seat. If it's not Lawson, it's Zhou.
I just think that on the Bottas side of it, it seemed like a silly decision when he did leave Mercedes to go to whatever it was called back then, just Sauber, I think,
Sauber.
Alfa Romeo maybe. I just don't know what he thought he was going to achieve there. Still wasn't going to be much of anything, and if only someone could have told him that. Oh wait, literally most everyone could have told him that. And I just it for me it was a bit like Vettel, not as extreme, but in terms of hanging around longer than was necessary. Vettel should have retired after he left Ferrari, and just it. Neither exit was particularly graceful, and I just think Bottas, at least he had that championship, the Constructors' Championship with Mercedes in 21 to round things off and have a somewhat positive note to end on. Because since then, okay, yeah, he's reinvented himself personality-wise, and that's great for making money and all the rest of it, but he could have done that anyway. It didn't need to be F1. It was just the biggest platform to possibly do that in. But in terms of actually contributing to the on-grid racing action, he's not done anything, and you're just there going, yeah. And what are we here for? And brutal in some ways that I'm saying, but it's not untrue either. And I'm here for the racing, I'm here for the sport, and I want everyone to be contributing to that in some way. It's kind of like, you know that Magnussen's not going to win a race or win or get on the podium, but he definitely adds to the calamity of it and gives us some great stuff from it. And he did in his final race here, and it's why Stroll annoys everyone so much. Even friends of mine who know nothing else about F1 have come across certain videos of certain people writing about Lance Stroll on YouTube and gone, "Oh my God, I understand why you're so frustrated at him now." And it's kind of like, luckily we never near that near with Bottas, but it's on the outer edges of that.
He's just been beige all season. I think that's the kindest way to describe him, is he's just been beige. It's not been incredibly offensive or dangerous or reckless. It's just
He's
been
just been
there,
there.
driven round. That's it.
Nearly there too.
Nearly
Because
there.
sometimes there's like glimmers of hope and you think, ooh, and then it just, oh.
Yeah, like qualifying was decent. He managed to haul that tractor right up into the top 10. You're sort of going, "Oh, we're gonna finally see something," and then no, we didn't.
No, you're
No.
not.
Meanwhile, speaking of sort of tractors getting hauled into places they're not likely to be, Nico P8, Kevin P16.
You
I
just
don't
hope for
want
the team
Kevin
that
to
they can
go.
carry this forwards. Yeah. So we're going to make the same points, so we'll let you go for it anyway.
I don't want Kevin to go.
No, not ready for
No,
it
I
either.
Why?
No, he was just absolute hero this weekend, wasn't he? I mean, the fact that he gets driven into and then decides, you know what? Sod it. And just
Fastest lap
pits
time.
multiple times to keep going onto soft tyres. He's like, what are you doing, man? It's like, oh, he's just going for fast lap. Not to necessarily take it away from anyone, but just because he can. And I just love that. It's like, oh, you want to see me go quickly? Want to see me do it again? You want to see me do it again? And just repeat, repeat, repeat until the end of it. And I just absolutely love that. And you just hope that the team can carry this momentum forwards next year because they really deserve it. We was I think this is the one team where I think all three of us might agree, if we had the power to decide, we wouldn't changing that driver lineup at all because you want to see what they could build on from this year. And as much as I like Behrmann, that's a rookie coming into things. You're going to have to be a little bit patient there. And Ocon, I'm not sold on. I mean, again, nice person, all the rest of it. But in terms of Grand Prix performance, I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to do much more in a Haas than what he could have done in the Alpine. So it's just a shame that both of them are leaving. And it was a neat weekend from Hülkenberg as well. And while not the result on paper that Magnussen probably wanted, like I said, the fastest laps business was just good fun to watch. And just, it was weird to see a battle between him and Hamilton for the fastest lap of the Grand Prix as Hamilton's carving his way up through the field. And then Magnussen's like getting the fastest lap, but then Hamilton gets like the fastest first secondary going, this is a very bizarre element of this Grand Prix, but I'm absolutely here for it.
Do you think that it got to the point where Haas were like, all right, Kevin, you're not going to get into the points. Just go out and have some fun. We'll just keep giving you, keep dishing you some new tyres and you can just keep banging out lap after lap, just having fun.
Was gonna say you're not gonna get any points, but do you want to take one away from someone else just because you can?
Yeah.
Yes, I will.
The tyre allocation is irrelevant when it comes to the testing over the weekend, so they might as well blow through those soft tyres. So
Especially since it's the last race of the year as well.
you
You've
might as
got
well let
absolutely
them
no
go
need to
have some
do
fun.
anything.
Yeah, just
Yeah.
absolutely send it. Don't be gentle. It's a rental
It
final
was like the
time.
next extreme version of what Ricciardo did in Singapore in terms of you're not coming back. Do you want to just drive and just get as close to a perfect lap as you can get, which Ricciardo then did in Singapore. And then Magnussen just keeps doing perfect laps because he keeps beating himself over and over again. Like, it's not bad. It's kind of an underrated way of leaving the sport that we've seen twice this year now. And I need to think, have we had this before in some way?
Yeah, it's a beautiful way for it to end. It's very much the race of what could have been. Hülkenberg's pace in qualifying was biblical, and even in the race, he was up there
Such an
jousting for
excited
points.
message from Ellie Mae about we might be getting a Hulk pole here. I'm like, oh my God, it's
A
happening.
Hulk podium would have been fantastic, regardless. But yeah, Haas have now got an idea of what they're doing, and with a bit of luck, can carry that on for next year. Magnussen could have been on to something exciting with that final belch of pace on the softs, but yeah, we'll wait and see.
That's who I'm predicting fills in for Max Verstappen's paternity leave. Kevin
Hülkenberg comes
Magnussen.
back.
No,
Or
Kevin Magnussen.
Magnussen. Like, yeah. Magnussen. Would be
Three.
interesting. Although
And,
I will say,
I'm piggybacking off that so that I can get Magnus into Cadillac for 26.
Although I will say on Esteban Ocon moving to Haas, he's got a new race engineer while he's there, and first female race engineer we've seen in the sport, I believe, which is quite a fun little sort of pointer, like Haas making these.
Mad
sort of...
that it's taken that long.
Yeah, yeah.
I just thought you'd there would have been a couple that we just somehow missed. Before.
Yeah, but
it's all because they're on the radios. Then.
Yeah. That's who we'll hear, sort of box now for softs Esteban, and it'll be a lass on the far end of it. I don't know who she is, I haven't had the chance to check, but yeah, we've somehow taken until the 2025 Formula One season to get a female race engineer. But there's already been videos of Esteban going around being a polite little so-and-so, introducing himself to all of the members of the team, little handshake, hello, my name's Esteban. So I'm looking forward to what he does, but whether he's going to have the raw pace or aggression that Hülkenberg and Magnussen have had and utilised one of the team is going to yet to be seen. Back to the race, and Piastri pits to serve his penalty for contact with Colapinto, emerging P15. Hamilton gets one around the outside of Russell at T9 to take fourth in the Grand Prix, while Lawson suffers a mechanical failure and retires. Which brings, of course, to Mercedes, Lewis P4, George P5, and there has been some interesting overlaps between this, Lewis's last race for Mercedes, and Brazil 2012, Lewis's last race for McLaren. Obviously, in Lewis's last race for McLaren, we saw Red Bull's multiple-time world champion, Sebastian Vettel, spun out on the opening lap and recovering to P6. We also saw Sergio Perez retiring on the opening lap. We also saw a British driver securing the victory for McLaren. We also saw a Spanish driver, Fernando Alonso, taking second place for Ferrari. And then we saw the other Ferrari driver completing the podium. So there's this strange symmetry that seems to have emerged from it all.
Does this mean then that when Hamilton retires after he leaves Ferrari, that somehow Perez will still be there and retire from lap one?
Yeah, I guess he'll retire from lap one.
Because the rest of it is Cadillac, very feasible, but somehow Perez has to be there.
Or whatever 12th team is being currently touted, by the time that Lewis retires from Ferrari,
Perez Racing is dad's set up a team.
Yeah, yeah, it'll sort of be the Perez Racing team, PRT.
For the race itself, Russell is about where I expected him to be, and Hamilton once again showing why it ain't over till it's over. But I think the highlight for me is the fact that you owe me a beer.
I do. I do indeed owe you a Hoxton. As agreed. So,
That made it for me, because I joked with you in preview, I think, of, so if he finishes fourth or something, does that qualify as that? Let's just go and does that. And I think it definitely qualifies.
I think what it means more importantly is he maybe listens to this, but yeah.
Needs a beer. I can do this for him.
I will earn Timo his beer. Impressively, though, it also rings true, and I say this as a bit of a George Russell fan, the fact that you can make Lewis Hamilton start at the back of the grid and give George Russell pole, and they'll somehow finish line astern with Russell behind Hamilton. And I think that is the huge difference in talent that you've got in those two drivers. George is great, don't get me wrong. That Mercedes is a bit of a dog at the moment, but crucially, Lewis is again proving he can go and extract something from that car each time around. As much as he hates it, he can go and do it.
It was Lewis's overtake on George at turn 9 on the last lap. That has to be one of the best overtakes of the season, and shows that he gave it his all right till the end.
It was just very fitting as well. I thought that the last overtake he makes in a Mercedes is against a Mercedes. And I think coming into this race weekend, over their tenure together as teammates, they were level on points. And by overtaking him, he then goes, nope, I'm taking that one as well for me. So you might beat me in other metrics, but this one, not having it.
Lewis Hamilton sick of going into Abu Dhabi level on points in some sort of contraction. And also, the last time he came to Abu Dhabi level on points with someone, he wasn't able to make the overtake around turn 9 to win.
I did this also time, think that at the same time. I thought this is what you should have done last time.
Yeah, just go for it that little bit more. Hope and see.
It just made me think of if they do a replay of that scene from Infinity War, Gort actually goes for the head.
Yes, yeah. It's like, this time I went for turn 9. Not the podium finish though we would have wanted to see for Lewis, but a challenging drive from the rear of the field, proving really just what makes him so exceptional. George's race was all like not sparkling overall, though struggling to catch that Alpine has me worried for them going into next season, especially if Haas move up to replace the season-opening pace that Aston Martin had this year. Mercedes could be in with a bit of a trouble. Lewis's drive wasn't one of his all-time greatest, but by no means was it a shabby one. A fitting send off for the champion, though, as he moves over to the Scuderia. In the race, Norris then takes the checkered flag with the Ferraris in tow. Second and third isn't enough for them to bag the title for Ferrari, and McLaren take the win for the first time since 1998. So, with that, we might as well talk.
Which I did quite like, by the way. Again, I think it was Channel 4, it may have been Sky, not sure. Talking to Lewis about this, and he goes, well, you know, we did have 2007, but, you know, aside from the obvious there, I thought, I just love that he just had that immediately to mind and go, no, we did. We did have that. I was there for that.
Yeah.
I know. But yeah, it's fine.
According to the little plaque on the trophy, you don't. So we might as well talk about McLaren, one of whose drivers was just about born when McLaren were last crowned world champion, and one of them was several years away from even being conceived. Lando P1, Oscar P10.
Norris. This is the kind of driving that Norris needs to do all the time. Where's the spin? I think, what was it? Singapore that he made, that we were saying that that's the kind of drive he needs to be doing more often. And Zandvoort was like a tease of that, but it felt still a bit flat. But Singapore was then the next one. I think this is the other one. He just didn't crack under pressure, like you were saying earlier at some point in the podcast. And I'm like, where's this been?
He just didn't put a foot wrong under pressure of, you know, a world championship hanging in the balance. You know, he didn't have Piastri there to fall back on at all, because it really wasn't a great race for Piastri. I mean, the contact with Verstappen wasn't his fault. I think gaining the 10-second penalty for his contact with Colin Pinto was harsh, but he struggled through that race. He got stuck behind Fernando Alonso for far too long, and then Stroll so that Alonso could pit to come out ahead of Oscar.
The one time Stroll does something useful. And it's getting in the way of Piastri. I just think, oh, poor man. Why are you on the receiving end of this?
It's utilising Lance Stroll to his strongest forte, which is getting in the way.
Yeah, I know. It's just annoying that it actually turns out to be useful at the most inconvenient time for someone we actually care about. Yeah, it was just unfortunate. Decent recovery, though, I thought, Piastri coming back into P10, all things considered. And like you said, Jesse, it's kind of mad that the last time McLaren won the Constructors' Championship, it was with David Coulthard and Mick Hacken.
Very different times. Lewis Hamilton was still in karting at that point in time. There is a great press shot of Coulthard, Hacken, and I think their reserve driver as well, plus one of their guys that's in like Formula 2, Formula 3, and then their two karting guys. And one of them is a very, very fresh-faced, like, seven-year-old Lewis Hamilton or something, sort of going...
And Fernando Alonso's only just moved from Renault the first time to whichever team he's going to go to for the first time as well at that point, so...
Yes. Somewhere.
We were just born, me and Timo.
I had...
We were the curse that McLaren couldn't break.
He had already seen Jacques Villeneuve crowned Formula One champion in 1997. Anyway, yeah, I think the interesting thing for me, though, for McLaren is, as a team, they haven't had a DNF the entire season, technically. Norris's result in Austria counts.
It's such an annoying technicality.
As last, because of the distance he had covered. Yeah, he doesn't technically count as a DNF. However, more importantly, Oscar Piastri owns the rare title of being one of only a few drivers, Lewis in 2019, Max in 2023, and Schumacher in 2002, to complete every race of the season. He's also the first non-champion to do it as well, so he's got decent consistency. But this race felt like an unfortunate hark back to his rookie season, a little messy at points. Norris's drive, though, as we've already said, was one that was unfussed. And if he can carry that on, we'll certainly put him in good title contention next season. Now it's actually interesting as well next season. We've mentioned...
Yes, because you tried bringing this up in Spain, and I was like, no, there is too much of the season left for this to be interesting. Yeah, he was like, oh, he's completed all the laps of that. Good for him. It's Spain. Go away. Come back to the end of the year when he's done all of it, and we'll talk about it then. It might actually be interesting. And you know what? Fair play to Piastri for doing that, but now it actually counts as something.
Proof that Piastri also listens to the podcast when, you know what, I'm actually going to prove Jesse right on this one, or prove Timo wrong, or vice versa.
I think
I'll get more satisfaction out of just getting proven wrong rather than you get proven right.
I think we'll see more of that. Cars, they're getting more reliable, and drivers are crashing.
This is why we need Magnussen.
Anyway, we've already mentioned them a little bit. Aston Martin, Fernando P9 and Lance P14. Timo, you've got something to say?
It's the only thing I could think of to say. Stroll just needs to be taken to the farm. He just needs to have a nice life out by the farm. That's what he needs at this point, Lucas. Back and back.
Yeah. I mean, at least, as we just said, at least he played the team game in keeping Piastri behind to maximise Alonso's position on track and get them 2 points, but...
It is just kind of like expecting a priest to be religious, though. It's like the bang, bare minimum you'd be hoping for from a driver that's been in the sport this long.
Yeah.
I know you're not actually defending him, Ellie, but it just seems ridiculous that, oh, there is a silver lining to it. Really? This is the silver lining?
It's me trying to find positive theories, like how Jesse has the words thumb, why Tsunoda won't be in the Red Bull seat.
May I advise you to pick literally anyone else to be positive about or try to be positive about? Stroll is going to break you mentally on this one if you keep going down this route. Aston Martin as a whole, I think they'll just be glad that this year's over and done with now. So, I mean, so, look at, again, we've compared it so many times, 23 to 24, massive drop off. And yet, somehow, still securing P5 is somewhat impressive, but they'll be scratching their heads in some way, going, how did we manage to keep that?
I don't think they really secured P5. They were P5 in Bahrain and never lost hold of it. Until
they secured it early doors.
Yeah, they secured it early doors. They basically, what did they do in Bahrain that got them into that position? Alonso and Stroll.
Turns out Alonso did win a race, which didn't
matter. No, they scored 3 points, and then Alonso scored 10 in Saudi Arabia. And then they scored a further 12 points as a team in Australia. And then, yeah, Alonso had a fairly decent season opener, and then 8 in Japan. So by this point, they were doing all right. And that just left them pretty untouchable. Turns out you can just keep scoring like 2 points every race weekend, and it's just enough to hold on to P5 and the constructors.
It's all right. It's just more wind tunnel for Adrian Newey.
Yeah, maybe they started playing it tactically. That's what they were doing.
See, there we go. I mean, you should focus more on Aston Martin as a positive thing rather than Stroll specifically. I think that'll do you more good in the long term.
We'll see.
Still gone overboard just yet.
Anyway, we'll round out our review of the Grand Prix and the action with winners and spinners. So we'll start with our winners as we usually do. Ellie May, I'd like to start with yours, please.
Yeah, Gasly. I just think it was a solid little race from him.
Yeah.
I think he deserves driver of the day for the few, not driver of the day, my winners, because he's done, I think, just such a good job for the last few races, and he deserves that recognition.
Yeah. Not getting an argument from Timo and I on that one. Timo, your winner.
I've got to go for Hamilton because it's Hamilton. Would have been a nice role to get a podium, but P4 and overtaking your teammate around the outside of turn 9 ain't a bad way to go out either and get a few donuts on the end of it. And again, one of these Herculean efforts, a little bit like Leclerc, but less like Leclerc, weirdly, considering he also had a stonking start to the race. It was just a great way to recover after some perfectly timed bad luck in qualifying with that bollard. So, yeah, he did once again show why he is who he is, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him in red next year, even though it's going to take me probably to be retired to get used to seeing it.
Yeah, it's going to be a strange one optically. Meanwhile, my winner comes from the other side of that Ferrari garage, Charles Leclerc. Fantastic race for him, and again, proof that Ferrari have really got something in the tanks now. They know what they're doing, and to Ferrari to pull off a P19 to P3 race without the magic engine that was overfueling. What is this? This is bananas. So,
Fred Vasseur.
This is Fred Vasseur.
He is the holy one.
This is what happens when you put a Frenchman in charge of Ferrari. Things start to go good. Other side of that coin, though, spinners. Ellie May and Timo, on the count of three, could you both say the driver that you've chosen? 1, 2, 3.
Sergio Perez.
I'll sync that up in my edit.
Not a way you want to end your F1 career. That's all I've got.
Yeah.
Ellie May's thinking the same thing. She's not even bothering. So self-explanatory at this point.
Meanwhile, for me, Bottas, bit of a spinner this weekend. A race of what could have been an excellent quali paid out nothing. And then post-race saying maybe he made a mistake. Moving to stake really seals that argument. 3 years wasted. Insert Buzz Lightyear meme here. I'll perhaps try and put that in the edit as well. When it comes to our predictions, only 1 point this week, and I don't know if it's fittingly or otherwise, but it goes to Timo for his wild prediction, which came true, that Eline would score nothing.
Which she's not mad about in any way, shape, or form. I just want everyone to know that. She's perfectly happy with this being how I got a point.
Just when... the more successful you are, the more haters you get, and they just love to just cling on to that sort of any form of doubtful that you have.
Haters love
I'm not
to hate.
Get suckered into this again.
Even though all my predictions, it wasn't a wild prediction.
She's won outright for the season, and yet she still just can't let me have one thing.
Back to back as well.
Back to back.
Oh, yeah, she won last year. That can't be true.
No, she won last year. I can't remember if she won in 22 or not.
Yeah, she did win in 22 because she came late and she still managed to walk the floor.
Yeah, that was it.
That's why I didn't take it seriously this year. It's just like, there's no point.
Yeah. So she's done the triple crown. And yeah, fair enough. Anyway, Fantasy F1 review for Abu Dhabi on the Curbs Pub Chat, 350 points. Where did you pull that from? On the Curbs, 328 points. And then anyways, podcast team, 367 points.
I was quite surprised as well, and we consulted each other about strategies, and we had very different strategies. Anyway, what was your strategy again for achieving this excellent result?
I did fuck all.
Yes, that was it. Whereas I, Jesse, discovered what the limitless chip does.
Yes, so you did. Yeah,
and it completely, and I stuffed my team full of Ferrari, McLaren, and Mercedes.
I did the same thing with you. Yeah, earlier on in the season when I figured I'd know a race that was going to be solid enough for all of them to come in high. But yeah, that's why you won this weekend's fair enough. Meanwhile, though, Midbed's Racing P6 and Sophia's F1 team P37 languishing at the bottom. Does it still have Daniel Ricciardo in it?
Yes, it does.
That'd be why. Is it even worse that it also has Esteban Ocon in it?
I don't recall that much, but that won't have helped.
I can have a quick check, actually. Let's have a look and see. Sophia's F1 team. No, it does, however, have Lance Stroll, so it's sort of double hobbled regardless. Overall, though, Doors by Gunther Steiner, 5,247 points, is this year's Formula One Fantasy champion. Take a Stroll, 5,168 points. And What's the Racing Point, 5,167 points, which I believe all three belong to the same fella, I think. Yes. Yeah, do we know him?
I think the name is John Cena. I don't know him personally. Not probably related to Cena, so we can probably see him. But that's about all I've got.
Ellie Mae, do you happen to know John?
No, but polite clap, well done.
John, send us a message. We'll send you a thing, I suppose. I'm obviously doing a run to the post office to send Timo some beer, so I might as well put a thing in the post for you. There we go. Otherwise, On the Cubs Racing P8, JB Racing P12, LEMA's podcast team P19, The Greatest Moustache P37.
Greatest Moustache this year's Aston Martin, taking last place at the start of the season and just keeping it and not giving that ground to anyone else.
If you've got facial hair,
it's not a great sign when it comes to your...
I'll be intrigued what experiment you try next year. You've got some time to think about it.
Drivers that haven't gone through puberty yet.
See, I was thinking the other side of that. I was thinking drivers that are children.
Ooh. You could both do that.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. But I don't know if you've got the full roster of five. Right, I've got Nico.
Someone quickly.
Hulkenberg, Max.
It's a shame Colin Pinto's not staying. He
could with
have
his
technically 47-year-old counted.
Wife and three children.
Yeah, and we could have had Magnussen as well.
Yeah. So you're only getting two drivers with children on the grid.
Perez?
Oh,
no.
Oh, Perez as well. Well, yeah.
Oh, he went.
Oh.
Oh,
oh,
we should have
dogs.
No. If you did one with drivers with pets, though, although that's most of them these days. Lewis, Charles, Pierre, Max and the Cats. Nico.
We can do cat dads versus dog dads.
It's yeah, if you can find five of each, I think you're in for something there.
Or drivers that look like they'd own a cat versus.
But what do you do with Alex Albon, who's got a menagerie of
sorry,
bugs?
it's getting quite obscure at that point. You look like you'd own a cat, therefore you're in my team.
Yes.
Therefore, you go in the cat dad team.
You'd put Alex Albon in cat dad, I think.
Yeah, he's most known for the cats.
Yeah.
I feel. As much as I love Otty, I think he's known for the cats.
Unless he starts doing really shit, then he can maybe go in the dog.
Because you're team cat. Yeah.
I'm team cat.
Yeah. Right. No bias there at all in terms of how she's going to handle those teams.
No, because if you have dog, it's going to be people like Carlos Sainz, Lewis Hamilton.
That's going to be a great Pierre team. Pierre Gasly. Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah.
Don't check if Bortoletto's got not bought. Yeah, Bortoletto's got a dog or a cat.
Look,
Jack Doohan. He's a dog owner.
He's a dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the ones with the really long faces.
Yeah, droopy dog. He's got a basset hound. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked. So that's pretty much all we've got time for on this week's episode. We will be back with a review of Formula 2 and F1 Academy from their final races of the season, as well as at some point a full 2024 season review. So there's still some of us to come through the rest of this year. Maybe we'll have it all out before Christmas. Here's to hoping we will. In the meantime, though, Ellie May, where can the people find you?
Christmas caroling?
Yeah, Christmas caroling, why not?
Ellie May will be going door-to-door singing Christmas carols. Please give her figgy pudding or money. Timo.
She's hoping to get the whole nation done before Christmas Eve.
Better get going. Timo, where can the people find you?
Carrying the bucket next to her, but definitely not singing one iota because nobody wants that. If you don't want me there and you want me somewhere else, Instagram will be the place to find me and everything else that I do and have done over the course of this year, which covers just about a little bit of everything. So... He.Elvis.Data.OnTheCurbs.
Lovely stuff. And if you want more from me, you can, of course, find me at Classic Car Weekly, writing there as staff writer, doing all the events coverage. We're building up to our bumper Christmas issue, but we're recording this on a Tuesday, so technically, by the time you listen to this, our final conventional issue of the year will be out, featuring our picks of the best handling cars of the year and a whole host of other interesting bits and pieces besides. And, of course, there is the Classic Car Weekly podcast. We recorded that today as well, which I need to go and edit. Which is always a good listen to, worth picking up and listening. It's like the newspaper, but in your ears, so you can enjoy it while driving, which we don't recommend you do with the paper itself. Otherwise, we'll be back with some roundup episodes from the year. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.